Brian Schnee loved building race cars, and almost overnight, he found himself in the middle of a whirlwind that changed his life forever.
Doug Wolfgang passed Steve Kinzer coming off the four for the checkered and won that race. First time my car hit the racetrack with Doug. It was unbelievable. I was only 17 cars into my building career. I was still pretty green, a little fresh. And then that happened to me. And then my phone just literally started smoking.
Racers know the name Schnee, but few know how Schnee Chassis became a fabled racing brand. Behind the name is a humble, hardworking guy who will tell you there's no magic to his race cars, just attention to detail. But behind those details is someone who can listen to wisdom, learn from good advice, then bring it all together under one roof. So how did you first fall in love with racing?
Man, my first earliest memories of really getting into racing was probably when I was 7, 8 years old, maybe. I kind of grew up in Madison, South Dakota, a real small town. They had a really nice racetrack there, Interlake Speedway. And we moved there, and when I was growing up, my neighbor right around the corner had an old street stock, just a piece of crap street stock, but I was just drawn to that thing for some reason. And I used to go around there all the time, and Dave Krause was his name, actually. I can still remember his name, and number 38. And I just used to hang out there as a snot-nosed kid and just scrape the mud and grease off his car and just do whatever little bit I could. I just fell in love with it right off the bat, and then eventually my dad took me out to Interlakes, real small town, you know, looking for something to do with your son.
Right.
My dad was not necessarily a racer at all. I just think it was something to do and, you know, a little father-son bonding time or whatever. So once I started hanging out at Dave's house all the time in his garage and fall in love with racing right off the bat, then dad took me to the racetrack. And that's where I really just fell in love with the smoke, the smell, the sights and sounds, and just the drivers. And it was like probably, you know, stock cars back then. It had to have been probably about 68, 69. I was born in 62.
Okay.
So it was probably late 60s, and there really wasn't sprint cars then. It was like modifieds.
Oh, sure.
And that's what I really got drawn to, was those modifieds, those open wheels, no fenders. You know, the crashes were just insane, and it just, that's what really drew me in. So right from an early age, I just kind of had a neighbor that raced, and I got kind of into it with him. Dad took me out to the racetrack, and I was hooked.
And I mean, you obviously ended up as a car builder. Did you ever think about being a driver?
I wanted to drive first. That was my main goal, you know, and then, I didn't race until about 1980. I was just graduating high school, and I bought a street stock, $350. I bought the whole car, that race ready, and I spent probably $1,500 on safety equipment.
Yeah, right.
Bought new boots, fire suit, helmet, gloves, the whole deal. And so it was 1980. I think I started racing a street stock for a couple of years, but my main goal was to drive a sprint car someday. And building wasn't even really into the equation yet, but that came a little bit later.
Well, and what was it about the sprint cars that sucked you in?
Just the open wheels, the you know, lightweight, big horsepower, just the guys that drove them were rough and gruff, and it was just very appealing to me. Like, it just sucked me right in. Like, I want to do that. Yeah, right from the beginning, as soon as I saw those modifieds. And then I think it was about middle to late 70s, they kind of progressed to sprint cars. They started putting the tail tank on the back and getting rid of the tops, you know, and then they just started morphed into sprint cars.
And you talk about this happening in around Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I mean, maybe not a lot of people would think of that as being a hotbed for racing, but, I mean, was it?
Madison had a pretty good, you know, Interlake Speedway was a pretty good track. Just probably a lot of local guys, I would think. Mm-hmm. You know, Jim Matthews, I remember seeing there, Dave Engelbretson, Marlon Hanton was really big back then, Bud Berger. You know, it was just it's not like it is today, but they had a pretty good field of cars. I mean, every weekend they had a bunch of cars, and, you know, I was that young getting into it. They could have had 5 or 50 and it wouldn't have mattered,
right,
really, to me. But they did have a big field of cars, and, you know, back then things were cheap and easy, and so you had a lot of cars, actually. But yeah, I got really into that back then, and this was all in Madison yet. And we moved from Madison to Toronto, Canada in 19. I lived in Toronto, Canada in 1976. My mom was from there, and she wanted to go back home. And so they packed up the family. We moved to Canada. So I sat idle for a year. And you can imagine how I was itching. You know, I'm in Canada. I'm going to, like late grade school. I think I did up there a year, and it was all weird, just really weird. French was mandatory. I had to take that. So I was really getting into some different things and getting away from the racing. But inside, I actually had a slot car track that I had, and I had a little club where I had friends come over, and I actually think I charged them 75 cents or something and split up the money, and we actually raced slot cars like a real deal. I was really missing the racing.
Yeah.
I remember doing that in Canada. So when we moved back from Canada, that didn't work out apparently. So when we moved back a year later, I think it was in 77, we landed in Sioux Falls. Instead of moving back to Madison, my mom and dad just moved to Sioux Falls, a little bigger city, more opportunity for them, I guess. And lo and behold, when we landed in Sioux Falls, my neighbor right around the corner was Pat Campbell and had a six-cylinder modified, and the rest has been history. Yeah, I hung over there like he was my dad. I spent more time there than I did at my house.
So then how did you – what happened? What led you to start building stuff?
My wife and I bought a brand-new trailer home. We'd moved out together into an apartment, and then we ended up buying this brand new trailer and a brand new trailer court in Sioux Falls. And there again, right up the road was Steve Sharp, had a 360 sprint car, got to meet him, hung out there all the time. And he really did not want to drive the car, believe it or not. He just wanted to, he was owning it, mechanic in it, driving it. And he wasn't really a driver.
Yeah.
So he told me, if I help him out in the car, I can drive the car. Well, guess what happened? I'm over there every day, every night, working on this car. And back when I met Pat Campbell with the six-cylinder modified, he introduced me to Marlon Jones. And Marlon had a shop out in Hartford with a welder and a bender. And he didn't really build any cars, but he just did some parts and little repairs on his stuff. And as soon as I saw that equipment, I just kind of fell in love with the equipment like I did the racing, like mm-hmm. the bender and the welder and all that stuff. It just really grabbed me. So that's where it really started festering, the building part of it. And when I met that Steve Sharp that had that 360 car, you know, I ended up driving that car in 85 and 86. Mm-hmm. And he was really low budget. I did really well. I won some races. You know, we had a great time, but he was kind of a low budget guy. And I could tell he was getting ready to sell. So when that started happening after the 86 season, I drove for him in 85 and 86, really got the driving bug then big time, because I was you know, fairly successful off the bat, mm-hmm. won some races at Madison and a few at Huset's and Rock Rapids, and Steve wanted to sell the car, so that's when I had already bought a welder and moved it into his garage and started tinkering repair work and, you know, just maybe building some front axles and repairing front axles and stuff like that, and I really started getting the knack for it then, but through Pat Campbell and then through Marlon Jones, Marlon introduced me to a guy in Harrisburg, which was just outside of Sioux Falls, Don Larson, and he was actually building some sprint cars. He did probably 15 of them for Jim Lindbergh and some other good racers around the area, and I actually helped him build a few of those cars. I actually helped him notch the tubing and do a little bending, and he actually let me weld them up with a wire feed, which they're all built out of mild steel back then, and I'd taken a little bit of welding in high school, and then all these shops that I met these people had welders, and then I got my own. And so I had a little bit of a knack for how to build a sprint car, like how it starts and, you know, how it kind of goes together and stuff from helping Don. So then when Steve quit racing and I had already bought a welder and stuff, then, you know, I couldn't afford to race. And I was just, I think I was like 22, and which was young back then. Now it's fairly old to be driving, you know, like they start 14, right. 16 years old now. But, you know, back in 86, I think I was only about 22, and I just put my mind into building. I just started building parts, and one thing led to another, and built my first car in the winter of 86, 87.
What was it, you talk about seeing the welder and stuff and it kind of speaking to you, what was it about building and fabricating that sucked you in?
Just the tubing on the rack, you know, and the bender over here, the welder over here, the grinders, the whole scene kind of was, I don't know, it just grabbed me. It's like, some people would see all that and not even think twice. And, you know, they want to be an actor. They want to do this, do that. And for me, it was just hanging out with those older guys in the shop and just seeing all that stuff and seeing that tubing on the rack, thinking, man, I could take that and build something out of it, you know? And apparently I had it in me and didn't know it. But when I saw all this and got interested, it just, you know, grabbed me. And I still am very passionate about it. Even, you know, it's been 34 years or whatever. Not the same kind of passion, obviously, but I still love doing it. So you can imagine how I was back then when I didn't even know how bad I wanted to do it. It was just all kind of happening. And and I was just so fortunate to meet people and have racers that lived right around me all the time. And then this guy knew that guy. And when I got hooked up with Don Larson out in Harrisburg, I drove out there every night. And I used to get out there before him. He'd get home from work. And, you know, when you get home from work, when you're an older guy, you want to go in, talk to your wife, maybe have a bite to eat. And here right. I am out there, you know, just dying to get in a shop.
Yeah.
So just a lot of passion, and it just all kind of, you know, worked out. And, you know, a lot of breaks along the way, but it all started with all that, just being in those shops and just getting a real feel for it. And it just really, I just really liked it, you know, just really got into it.
Brian knew he loved building race cars and wanted to build his own. He scraped together enough tubing for one side, then called up a winning racer named Bill Rook to see it. Bill brought his team over to see this one side of a race car and bought it on the spot. This was the beginning of Schnee Chassis.
What do you remember about building your first car?
Everything. 1986-7, the winter there, I didn't have any tubing, of course, didn't even really know where to get tubing. And all I know is I just wanted to start building a car. I think I had enough experience in my head or whatever to kind of know how Don did it. And I just wanted to do it on my own and start building a car. So there was a guy by the name of Ron Fick in Laverne, Minnesota, who was a car owner at the time, like a winning car owner. His cars won championships at Don Reiner's, and very good car owner, and he built cars, so I knew he had tubing. So I contacted him, and it was in early February, middle January, late January, right before Florida started. And he only had so much tubing left, enough to maybe build one side of a car. And they were just leaving for Florida for like 3 weeks, and I was just devastated. I couldn't get any tubing to finish his car. So I actually bent the tubing at his shop, because I don't think I had a bender at that time. I remember bending some of the bends out there at his shop, which was crazy. That was in Laverne. I was in Sioux Falls. So I think I did that, and I built the one side, and I stood it up in my jig, and I went over and I got Bill Rook, who was a championship winning driver from the area in the 360s, won the championship all the time, big winner, really good guy. And that's who I wanted to go to get in this car. And I'd raced with him in 85 and 86. So I knew him a little, good enough where I could go over to his shop and say, hey. So I did. I was really intimidated. They're a little bit older than me and a little different crowd than I hung with, but yeah. He was really a good racer. So I went in his shop by his house one time, and I said, hey, I got my shop over here not too far away. I got one side done. You want to come look at that? Would you be interested? And him and his brother and the guys that helped him were all interested, so they came over and looked at it. And as soon as they looked, I had that side welded. And as soon as they looked at it, they wanted that car. I couldn't believe what a break that was to get one of the best racers in the area to get my first car. So they got back from Florida. I got my tubing, got the car all done and everything. Bill got it. He was hooked up with Lauren Woodke in Lakefield, Minnesota, another big engine builder, big name in sprint car racing. Lauren was a car owner. Jack McCorkle drove for him, won all the time. A lot of good guys. So anyway, we got there, and he got the car all put together in Lauren's shop, and first night out, they won, you know. And I think Bill won about 6 or 8 out of 10 or 12 races right at the beginning of the year, and he actually got killed in that car at Father's Day at Husetts. So that was a devastation. I mean, it kind of set me back a little bit, you know, because it was just so tragic how that all went down. It was terrible. They just had a 5-year-old son, and Bill was a great guy, and just boom, gone. And so I just, I don't really remember hesitating very much as far as like, oh, I'm going to quit doing this. This is too dangerous. I don't remember ever thinking that way. After that, you just get through the grief of everything that just happened. I just went right back in the shop. And my second car I built was for Marlon Jones. He was probably the best racer in the area in a 410 at the time. And he won right off the bat. And yeah, they were all winners right off the bat. And when people win in a car and it's a different car, and back then there, you know, there was car builders, but there really wasn't Maxim, Eagle, you know, J&J was around. They've been around forever. But now you just, you know, you just pick up the phone. It's just so easy to order stuff. Back then it was a little harder to do that. So with me coming along brand new, just built this car, they're winning right off the bat like crazy. It just, you know, the local scene just basically came to me to get cars and parts. And then, you know, there again, my fortune just couldn't have got any better. I met this girl in high school, and she ends up being Doug Wolfgang's sister-in-law. Like, her sister's married to Doug. You know, we got married in 1985, and so we've been married 35 years, still, you know, still going. So the luck I had of meeting her, Doug Wolfgang's brother-in-law, I get to know Doug, I'm starting to build cars. I built about 17 cars, and then he was going to drive for Danny Peace, that 8D car. They got that deal all put together, and he was looking for, you know, somewhere to get the cars built, and came to me and asked me if I wanted to do it. And I said, you know, heck yeah. And so that's how that all got going. And once that happened, it just, my whole world just turned upside down. I mean, when Doug went out in 89, and I actually went down with a friend of mine to, I was down in Georgia, that first USA race where they ran that 8D car. And Doug passed Steve Kinzer coming off a 4 for the checkered, won that race. First time my car hit the racetrack with Doug. It was unbelievable. So that started, and then he won a bunch more. He won like 53 races or something that year, you know, Knoxville Nationals, Syracuse, just all of it.
All in your car?
All in my car. So you can imagine, I was only 17 cars into my building career. I was still pretty green, a little fresh.
Right.
And then that happened to me. And then my phone just literally started smoking. You know, every car owner in the country, mechanic, Australia, New Zealand, they're just calling wanting cars. So, yeah, it was pretty crazy there for a while in early, like, 1990.
So what was it? I mean, do you know, like, what was it that made your cars so fast? Like, what was the innovation that you had sort of put into that car to make it a winning car?
You know, I look back at it now, and there was no tricks or anything. There's really no tricks to any of this. It's just, you know, just attention to detail. It's the way I tell everybody about anything. It's just the little details. It's like the foundation. If you don't get that right, then the end product's not going to be right. You know, if your jig's a little off, all your cars are going to be off. So that jig has to be, and I learned that from, you know, Pat Campbell, Marlon Jones, Don Larson. You know, I had a really good education of just racing in general. You know, I used to help many guys on their race car, you know, go to the track with them, spend time in their shop. And I was like a little encyclopedia. I just couldn't get enough of it. Mm-hmm. So all that really benefited me when I got a little bit older and started building cars. I had all that experience already of how that car works, you know, what makes them tight, loose, you know, all that kind of stuff. I already had all that down. So by the time I started building cars, it just, you know, get everything square, get everything nice the way it's supposed to be, and which isn't that hard, you know. So I just did all that, and those cars were good cars. And I think a little bit of it might have been luck, but I think a lot of it was the people I knew and hung out with and the experience I was gaining. Mm-hmm. You know, so then when it come time to build cars, when I decided I wanted to start doing it, it was, you know, a lot different than just going into it cold and not knowing anything. You know, you just want to fabricate but right. Not know anything about sprint cars,
right?
So that helped a lot. And then of course, when you know, and I had the great people, like Marlon Jones was an awesome racer in the area, and I had all his knowledge, you know, and Jim Lindberg and just everybody. Then when Doug came along, it was just, you know, it's Doug Wolfgang. I mean, so now I got all that knowledge, and that's where it really advanced, like all my learning and, you know, to build cars and in race. I started racing again in 1990 and raced till like 2000, I think, 2001.
And you were driving a sprint car?
Yeah. I raced in 85 and 86 for Steve. And then when he sold, I started building stuff, put all my attention into that. And once I got that rocking, you know, like I say, through a series of good fortune, getting to meet all these people and my stuff just taking off. And, you know, come 1990, I just had this little shop I was renting for $200 a month. And I had all this money coming in, selling all these cars, and I had just minimal equipment. I had hardly zero overhead, and everything back in 1990 was cheap. The tubing, the heater, the, you know, just everything. It made it a lot easier. So then I bought all my own stuff and I raced until like 2001.
So you're at this point, you know, 90s, early 90s, racing, running your own business, filling the orders and building cars, and having a family, right?
Oh, yeah. We got two kids back then. Our son was born in 87 and our daughter was born in 90, right in the thick of things. Like, it just was right when things were starting to get started and then take off.
How did you manage that?
My wife did 90% of that. Yep. You know, baseball games, all that stuff. You know, I missed a lot of that stuff because of racing and whatever. So yeah, Gene is, you know, like I said, we met in high school and got married, and we graduated high school in 80 and 81, and we got married in 85. So she's pretty much been right there by my side the whole time I've ever done anything. The first time I ever picked up a TIG welder, I couldn't weld. I basically started crying a little bit. Like, I was so upset that I just couldn't weld. I didn't realize it was that hard, because when you watch somebody TIG weld, it looks easy. You know, anything that somebody does good, they just make it look easy.
Right.
So I should be able to do this. Well, I went in there and I couldn't even hardly stick two pieces of metal together. So I was like, well, I got to learn how to do this if I want to build race cars, you know? So she was there for that. She's just been there the whole time. It's amazing. You know, we made it through all that, because it is a lot. It's you know, a business, racing and raising two kids. And I race locally a lot, but I'd go to Tulsa, Oklahoma City. You know, we went all over the place. I remember racing all over, up in North Dakota, way up in Cedar Lake, Wisconsin, which was great for my racing career, because that's just more knowledge. It was really hard. I mean, you know, you're younger at the time and you're going through it, so you just do it, because I see other families doing it now. And, but now I'm older and I look back at it, I'm like, oh my God, how did that happen?
In just a minute, Brian and Gene start to feel the wear and tear of chasing greatness after decades of building chassis together. Something had to give, so Brian has the wild idea to call up one of his biggest competitors. But first, to see photos of Brian and a few of his cars, check out The Toolbox, our automotive blog. Find it at speedwaymotors.com and click the Toolbox link on the front page. We'll also post a few to Facebook and Instagram. New episodes of What Moves You come out every 2 weeks on Tuesdays. If you like what you hear, tell a friend to listen to What Moves You on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you listen to podcasts.
So back to the 90s, early 2000s, you're running your shop in South Dakota. And then at some point, how did you come to be here at Eagle?
Well, I had back from about 1990 when Doug won all them races, and that following build season, we were just crazy busy. I hired a kid basically out of high school and kind of taught him how to weld and everything. Matt Richard, he's out in Washington now. He worked for us for about 15 years. So I did have a few employees back then that kind of, you know, took the burden off of me or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think it was right around probably 97, 98 or so, you know, everybody just moved on. And Gene and I, got a nice new shop there in Sioux Falls. And I think we just started doing it ourselves, because I know we did it about 18 years on our own, just me and her, until I moved here. So when Gene got involved in the business, and, you know, I just kind of started her out making like Nerf bar spuds, just notch a piece of tubing, cut it off, you know, face it off in the lathe, just some real basic little things. Well, then it was, you know, okay, well, can you do this and can you do that? And pretty soon she's doing everything but damn near bending the main frame rails up and welding. She did everything else, made all the pieces, you know, ordered all the tubing, did all the bookwork. So me and her, you know, I had her hands full, and it was at least 18 years. Well, through all those years of lifting all that tubing and cutting all that tubing, you know, it just wore her wrist out, and she started really complaining about her wrist. So she had a carpal tunnel surgery on one wrist and then the other wrist right after that. And this is probably middle to late 2000s. You know, she basically just started getting physically wore out. Like, it's a demanding job. And I had gotten into a band with some friends of mine. I played the drums and you know, we had a really good legit band for about 10 years there. A lot on the weekends, a lot of practice in the evening. And I was getting semi-burnt out, you know, doing the building cars. And I just got done racing in 2001. So I wasn't really going to the track. I was still going to the track, I guess, you know, for the business, but I wasn't racing anymore. But with the band, when that came along and just all the years of doing it, I just started getting a little burnt out. And I was starting to pay a lot of attention to the band. In the meantime, you know, we had this beautiful acreage just outside of Sioux Falls that we bit the bullet off and bought, and then all this started happening. And then 2001 with the 9/11, you know, that kind of changed how things were happening after that, especially the cost of everything started slowly going up. And it just, we really started to struggle out in that acreage. And I'd have to say probably most of the problem was just my, I don't know, I wouldn't call it my passion, but just my desire, I guess, to just keep grinding and working that hard, which it was day and night, every weekend. And, you know, that's how you succeed, is to do that. And I could tell that things were starting to slip a little bit and we were starting to struggle a little bit. And it was getting to be about 2012 or whatever. And I had heard rumblings that Mike Long was hired at Eagle in Illinois to run that place, and they were going to move it here to Lincoln. By Speedway Motors. And I didn't know anything about Speedway buying it then. That really wasn't even in the plan as far as I knew back then. They were just moving it right here to Lincoln. I'm thinking, man, now Eagle's going to be basically right in my backyard. That's going to even hurt a little bit more. And so I made the call to Mike. I'd met him a few times and talked to him on the phone. I thought I knew him good enough to at least just call him and throw a bug in his ear. And that's how this whole moving to Lincoln started, was just picking up the phone and calling Mike and say, hey, would you, I hear you're moving Eagle to Lincoln. Would you be interested in hiring me, or maybe, you know, merging with me, or was there any interest at all in any of that? And he just was super excited about it. Just right off the get go. He sounded really excited and really interested. So it all started then, and it took about a year. And then, you know, like I said, Gene had those surgeries, and I just thought, man, either we're going to have to sell the acreage and move into something small and just have it paid for and just work by myself, which I just really wasn't wanting to do that at the time. I was still kind of burned out and having to do all of it by myself. So I just kept talking to Mike, and probably over a year's time, you know, we got it all done, signed a contract, came here. I sold all my stuff in Sioux Falls except for like a bender and a welder and some other things, but I had all kinds of equipment. I had a CNC machine. I had three Bridgeport mills, two big lathes. I sold all that stuff, and we got here and everything. And then, I don't know, I think I started working here in 2012, and by about 2014 or 15 or so, then Speedway ended up, you know, purchasing the whole deal, and I sold Schnee Chassis to Speedway then.
Okay.
So I don't really own Schnee Chassis anymore, but I just couldn't be happier though, because just being down here with the extra help and, you know, and just working for Speedway, I mean, they're solid. You know, it's just such a relief. The stress is gone. I still get to do what I love to do. As far as not owning the company anymore, it just doesn't really bother me, because I'm still Brian Schnee, you know. I mean, even though I don't own Schnee Chassis, and that was one of the reasons in the very beginning, my first car, I wasn't called Schnee Chassis, it was BJ Racing Components. And after I built that first car and everything exploded, I wanted to have my name on the chassis. I didn't want anybody to say, what's a BJ car? Like, who's that? So I ended up putting my own, you know, just called it Schnee Chassis, and I'm glad I did, because now I don't own it, but I'm still Brian Schnee. So
what was the BJ for?
Well, that's another story. My dad passed away in 1984 of cancer, and I was just, you know, starting to help these guys in their shops and get a knack for some things, how to build cars. And I talked to him many times about maybe building cars or maybe getting a business going. And after he passed away, I was going through all his things, and in a little spiral notebook, he was a self-employed livestock nutritionist, so he had a lot of books with contacts in it and stuff. And I was just kind of looking through them, and all of a sudden, it was empty page, empty page, empty page. And then all of a sudden, I turned another page, and there was this, it just said BJ Racing on there. That's all it said. And I thought, man, that's really weird. Like, I never talked to my dad about naming it anything, or even if I was going to do it or whatever. And it just said BJ Racing. And that's why I called it BJ Racing Components. And I'm guessing it was for Brian and Gene, maybe. You know, I don't know. I'll never know. He passed away. I'll never get to ask him. But I'm guessing it, and it was kind of hard to change it from that to Schnee.
Yeah.
But I could see what was happening with Bill winning all these races in that car, and then Marlon winning all them races. And then, you know, a lot of other locals got cars there. Like I said, it was my 18th car, I think, was Doug's. And by that time, it was just crazy. So I just kind of wanted to have my name on it because I thought maybe it would go somewhere someday.
I mean, you talk about the starting out and having all of the passion to just drive you forward no matter what. And then that sort of waning and what that meant, you know, that's a real thing. When you do what you love, if you start to feel that burden, that fire is dying, you know, there's some complex emotions that go along with that. When you moved here to Lincoln, did that sort of get reinvigorated and sort of work itself out?
You know, it was all a little hard at first, but, you know, with anything, you go through a lot of hard times, but I don't know why. I stuck with it. And I'm so glad I did, because now it's just, I just really couldn't ask for anything better. You know, I'm building basically all the Eagle cars, and I build all my cars, and I just love it. I mean, I have no problem with it at all. Like, a lot of people call and they ask what the difference is between the two cars. And I basically just tell them nothing, because I'm doing them both, and there really isn't any difference. So, and that's kind of, it's kind of cool to me to know that I'm down here in Lincoln working at basically Eagle Chassis, building Eagle cars, when they're one of my biggest competitors, you know, so that's different. It's like stepping out of your business into your competitor's business, right in the middle of their stuff, you know, and then, you know, over time changing a few things and this and that. So, you know, at first it was hard. I didn't really care for that part of it at first. I struggled with it a little bit, but over time I really learned to enjoy, you know, teaching younger kids things and having them ask me questions all the time. It was weird at first, but now I really enjoy that. It's like a different side of my life now. It's like the end of the career is here, and I just really enjoy, you know, teaching these kids things and the welding. And I've learned a lot of welding things from them too, because I'm just like a experienced welder. I'm not a technical welder. And these kids go to school and learn all the technical stuff. Yeah. So I've learned a lot from them too. So it's just really been good lately. I'm just really glad I stuck it out for the years where it was harder to get to where I'm at now.
You talk about the older guys that sort of took you under their wing when you were young. I mean, do you feel like a mentor to these younger guys?
I do now. I didn't at first. I don't know. It was just kind of weird when I got down here. Like I said, I'm so used to just being, you know, with a few employees that I had hired over the years. And for most of the time, it was just me and my wife. So it was just, you know, after you do that for so long, just being around other employees and other workers was kind of different. So to have them, you know, say things and compliment you and ask you questions, it was a little weird at first. It felt weird, but it feels good and it feels normal now. I just think I had to get used to it.
Brian doesn't talk himself up much, and he's always crediting the people he learned from for his success. But not everyone can build a storied racing brand from the ground up. Just what was it that made Brian different?
If you were then going to give some advice to a younger guy who was just starting out, wanted to build cars, or if you, let's say you had a time machine and you could travel back to young Brian, who was just getting ready to bend that first piece of tubing on his first car, What advice would you give him?
You just have to have the passion and desire. If you don't have that, then just go find something you're passionate about and you got a lot of desire for it, because it's going to be long hours. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a lot of rejection. It's going to be a lot of disappointment. And to get through all that, you know, like when I started, I mean, I built my first car and a good friend of mine got killed in it. You know, that was devastating. But the passion and the drive I had behind all that after the grief settled down and things settled down, I never even hesitated. I just full speed ahead. And if you don't have that, then no matter what you do, I just don't think you're going to be successful. You have to have that passion and desire. So if they think they have that, then it's just grind. Just get out there and do it. You know, you got to get out there and just, you know, I started making wing mounts in the very beginning and just tacking them together with an arc welder because I didn't have a welder yet. I was using Marlin's. Anyway, I remember bringing these wing mounts out to the racetrack to show people, like, hey, look what I can do. And I can't imagine what they're thinking because, you know, Terry Taggart was the big parts guy back at Husetts back then. He was a racer back in the day, and he was like the guy to go to get parts and stuff. So I'd go up to him and show him this stuff, and he'd be like, get away, little kid, get away, mm-hmm. You know. And that's the rejection and the stuff you have to have the passion and desire to get through. Like, he was one of the biggest parts racer guys in the whole area. And he told me, just like, get away, you know, because the stuff looked terrible. But I kept going. And I'm telling you what, when Wolfgang passed Kinzer in 89, Savannah, Georgia is where it was. Mm-hmm. And Savannah, Georgia, off of turn four, won that race. It just validated every thing that I had, you know, before that, like, get away, kid, you can't do this, all that stuff just immediately disappeared. It's like, there you go, I did it, you know. And that was very satisfying.
But looking back, what are you most proud of?
Man, there's a lot, but I'd have to say probably building Bill Rook's car, my first one, having him win the first time out, because he was a good racer, don't get me wrong, but I mean, Wolfgang could win in just about anything at that time. He mm-hmm. was absolutely in his prime. So I know he could have went and got different cars, built his own, just whatever, and he still would have been really good. But it's just the way it all mixed together and it happened. It just happened at the right time, and I had just enough experience to build that car. And you know, that whole thing, the whole Wolfgang thing, those 2 or 3 years is just unbelievable. But it was, in my mind, it was almost kind of expected because he was already Doug Wolfgang and, yeah. You know, he was already great.
And already Bill, your brother-in-law.
Bill was a great racer, but he was just local, and build your first car and have it be that successful. That was pretty cool. But followed up with huge tragedy. I mean, just like, you can't even write it any worse, you know what I mean? It was terrible. So it was quite a bit there right in the beginning, but you know, I'd have to say just that whole deal with Bill Rook was probably my proudest moment, because I raced against him the 2 years before that. We were competitors, so I just tried to get him in that first car, and I only had that one side built. I didn't even have the car built, but I was so anxious and so like, mm-hmm. go, you know. I went over there and got those guys, and then hopefully they were going to come back and at least look at it, which they did, and that's what started the whole thing. So I'm pretty proud of all that, how all that went down. Because I was the one that went over to their garage and said, hey, come and look at this. You know, they didn't come to me and say, hey, can you build me a car? You know, it was my desire to get to him and say, hey, why don't you at least just come and look at this, see what you think, and you know. So it's that drive that you have to have.
You're a obviously talented dude. Do you build anything other than race cars?
Yeah, actually, I've done a lot of different things. You know, I built some motorcycle frames when Jesse James came out with that first, not his TV show, it was before that. He did something, and I got that tape, and I watched it, and he's out there heating up tubing with a torch and bending it on homemade wooden dies and building this really cool frame and all these wheels and stuff, and I fell in love with that. By that time, I had a machining center. I had everything. Mm-hmm. So that was another phase I went through. I started getting into motorcycles. I actually did build some wheels and pulleys and brake rotors, and I started building a frame. And there's a great example right there why I didn't go very far with it, because I started actually getting calls from people that wanted me to build them a bike. and all these different engine combinations and offsets and tire widths. And I knew zero about it. I just knew I wanted to do it because I looked at Jesse doing it and I'm like, man, that's cool. I knew I could do it, but I just didn't know anything about it. So once I started getting into it, and when I was getting into it, my sprint car stuff was suffering. People weren't getting their stuff. I wasn't making money because that's my bread and butter. Yeah. This is something I just fell in love with. I wanted to do it. So I spent some time doing that, and I realized that I had a guy call me. He wanted me to, in fact, it was a guy that owned Citywide Insulation that sponsored the R19 car in Sioux Falls, and he was a bike guy, and he wanted me to build him a frame, and I just didn't know. I didn't even know anything, so I just couldn't do it, and that scared me. So I kind of did some stuff for myself because I've had Harleys for a while, and I just kind of got out of that and just kind of kept doing the sprint car thing. And I had another guy from Illinois come along, wanted me to build a micro sprint, 600 micro. So I built the jig, built the car, did all that, realized, man, I ain't got time to do this. My sprint car stuff's, you know, piling up. I didn't want to hire a bunch of help. But I just look at those little cars, and when somebody wants you to build one, it's hard to say no.
Yeah.
So I did all that with that micro and never went any further with that, just built the one car. Just a lot of things like that. I got into some machining stuff, you know, which I'm not really a machinist. I learned on my own. They sat that machine down in front of me, and there you go. I had like maybe 8 hours of training.
Yeah.
You know, so I learned all that on my own, but I couldn't really do some really wicked cool stuff like, you know, people can. So I kind of backed off of that and just kind of stuck with the sprint car deal because that's what I know. You know, with all the racing experience and all the, you know, building, it's like, that's what you're good at. That's what you know. Just stick with that. So, yeah, I did venture off into some things, but while you're doing that, you got to make money. And when you're just you and your wife, and nothing's going out that door, you know, it didn't take long where I just kind of had to get back into the sprint car thing and work hard at that.
So you talked about the attention to detail that it takes to build a car, and that doing that as you do now, day in and day out, takes a lot of discipline to put that level of craftsmanship into a car. I mean, do you want to talk about that? What does it take to actually show up every day and know that that's what it's going to take to build a good car?
Well, what makes it easy for me is I love it, you know. So, like, you know, kids I've worked with in the past and whatever, they weren't really too into sprint cars. It was just a job. It was a welding job or a fab job for them or whatever. So if you were like that, I could see where it'd be a lot harder. But for me, I actually love the detail because I learned, you know, a long time ago, it's keep it simple, stupid. You know, it's the attention to the detail. It's the little fine things that make that one big thing a really nice product. So it's like welding, you know. I've just been welding so long, and if I'm there 10, 11 hours a day, I probably weld about 7 or 8 of those hours most days. And some days I weld all day long. And if you want really nice, super good TIG welds, it takes a lot of concentration to do that. So you can't just be, you know, kind of half whatever and go in there, and you can still weld. But I'm the type that every time I weld, I want that weld to look a little bit better than that one. I'm still that way after all these years. I still have that in me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's something I taught myself or it was just in me or what, but that's the way it is. So it does get a little grueling welding all day because you're concentrating so hard on that puddle and just keep, you know, I'm welding around tubing all the time. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to weld around small tubing like that. You're just constantly, you know, changing all the time position and stuff, and that's why it's hard. So it takes a lot of concentration and thought to do that all day long, and that can kind of wear you out. But the rest of it's, you know, just putting the car up in the jig and making sure everything's square and all that. That's, you know, that's the easy part, really. It's just the welding. And if something doesn't fit right, take it back over and notch it again rather than force it in there. There's a lot of that too, you know.
When we were building our car that we did with the Hall of Fame, you built it, and we were talking about our timelines, and of course there was a deadline because there's always a deadline. And I said, I you know, the last thing I want to do is come over here and you know, make you rush through this. And Mike Long was standing there and he said, we don't rush through cars because when you rush through cars, they kill people.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever think about that when you're working on a car?
Yeah, I've seen so much in my day at the racetrack, a lot of tragedy, a lot of death, a lot of you know, just a lot of sprint car crashes. So when I weld these cars, and I tell these kids this, I have pictures at my shop of Bill Rook's car, that first car I built. I mean, it ripped half the roll cage right off. It hit an I-beam, and it just tore through the cage. And I just show these kids these pictures just to let them understand that this is what could happen, you know, because they're not racers. And this is what they go through, and this is how hard they crash, you know. So I think about that all the time when I'm welding a car. Like, this is what could happen to this car, or this joint that I'm welding on the roll cage or whatever. Yeah, I think about that a lot when I'm welding a car, you know. So, and that's a whole nother deal there, is like the safety of these cars, just coming up with safety ideas and different things. And I've came up with a few, and now this last couple of years they came up with these new outlaw bars for the cage, which was a great idea. It's the weakest part of the whole the car is the roll cage, and that's where your head is. So it's just constantly trying to innovate safety. But what I've learned through all the years of trying to make stuff safer, the first thing the racers ask me is, it going to go faster? The first question they say, well, if I have you put this on my car, is it going to make it go faster? No, it might actually hurt the handling, or it's heavier, and I don't want it. That's their mentality, and that's been hard to go around. But like the new innovation with these outlaw bars, they call them, in the roll cage, you know, they've had some deaths and some injuries, and it's a common thing, them cages bending down. You know, that's a type of deal there where it was pretty much, they made a rule, you have to have them. And I love that, because it made the car way safer, and you have to run it. You can't cut them out at the racetrack if you're not handling, you know, which has happened. I came up with the butt bar back in the early 90s, and Sam Rodriguez, a customer of mine in Florida, really good customer, he's a winner, won at East Bay a lot. He wasn't handling one night when he got one of my new non-down tube cars from me, and I just started putting that butt bar in to save your tailbone from that rear end hitting that seat, which happened to me several times and many other racers. So I put this bar in there, and he cut it out with a hacksaw at the racetrack one night. I was like, oh, my God. You know, so I've had to deal with that my whole career, as far as when you want to come up with something safer, you're always thinking about it, and you might come up with something. Now you have all these racers that you have to get on board with you, because, you know, you have 10 people, you're going to have 10 different opinions.
Yeah.
So that's been a struggle, the safety part of it, but... Yeah, I think about that all the time, because I know firsthand, I raced 15 years, and I was in some pretty horrendous crashes, actually. I can't believe I'm still sitting here. So, you know, firsthand experience crashing, seeing all my cars crash and what they've gone through, and that's what I try to drill into these younger kids that come in and start welding. You know, show them pictures, talk to them, show them a video of a car crashing. I think it's really helped, because it just helps them understand how critical it is. It's not playground equipment, you know, it's actually something that could save somebody's life. So you got to take it super seriously.
I mean, that was all I have on my list. What is there anything else that you want to say?
Just to think that I fell in love with something when I was a kid, and here I am 59 years old, and I'm still doing it every day, still love it, you know, still married. It's pretty incredible how it's all, you know, worked out. Feel very, very fortunate, but still love doing it. So I don't know. It's just, I don't know what else I'd be doing, you know, if I couldn't do this. I'd want to be a rock star, but it's too late now. But, you know, I got it made. I still get to work, you know, all day long building cars and being around it. And today Keith Coons is at the shop. You know, are you kidding me? I've known of him forever. We've never officially met. And when I went out and introduced myself this morning, he says, oh, I've heard a lot about you. And it just gave me like chills to think that Keith Coons has heard a lot about me. Like, what? So that was cool. You know, all that kind of stuff I'm really starting to appreciate now. Like, where before, I wouldn't even have thought about it. I just would have went in one ear and out the other and like, oh, whatever. Now it's like, wow, Keith Coons, you know. It's pretty cool.
Thanks to Brian Schnee for being our guest today, and thanks to all of you for listening to What Moves You, a Speedway Motors podcast. To see photos and watch video we referenced in today's episode, visit the toolbox at speedwaymotors.com. Email the podcast at podcast@speedwaymotors.com, and if you like what you heard, tell a friend where to find us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.